Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
I'm Ryan Lambert from Elite Prospects.
I'm Sean McAdoo from The Athletic.
And hey, did you see yesterday, Sean, that there's a new Metallica album coming out early next year?
I did see that.
Now, they're doing a big tour, okay? And it's in the summer, so they're doing like stadiums and stuff like that. But they're doing a gimmick of if you come see us two nights in a row at every venue, we will play two completely different sets. You won't see one song from the night before. And this to me is like a bold gambit, you know? Because like if you're a certain kind of Metallica fan, you're like, hey, I only want to hear you're like, I only want to hear the stuff from like 1988 and earlier, please. Yeah. And but this got me wondering, because like I'm going to go to at least one of these shows, probably not to.
Are they like, do they give you the set list in advance, or am I?
I can't imagine.
Okay,
I can't.
Because I got like I'm like you. I'm not a Metallica fan, but I like Metallica fine. I'm just not, you know, it's not a band that I follow. But if I went to a Metallica concert for 2 hours and they didn't play Enter Sandman, I'd be like, I'd still be there at the end. Like they'd be like. After the encore, I'd still be sitting there like, no, they're coming back out and doing Sandman. And they'd be like,
they turn on all the lights in the stadium.
They're like sweeping.
The guy pushes a broom in front of
exactly,
you.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I'm like, nah, you're not going to get me. I know. All right. So you take your, this feels like a way to make you buy two tickets. I got to be honest.
Right.
I appreciate the framing as like a service for the fans, but yeah.
Yeah. The problem with Metallica's discography for me is that there's a lot of bullshit mixed in there that I don't want to get involved with. You know, if I have to sit through, I don't know, Unforgiven 2 or whatever, I'll leave. That's it. Bye. You know? Okay. But yeah, I guess what I was wondering with you is like, is there a band where they could get you to go to two nights in a row if they played in your city?
Yeah, I would, Nine Inch Nails for sure, and I would probably do the Guns N' Roses reunion.
Yeah, GNR. I figured on GNR.
The thing with Guns N' Roses is like they don't have that much. Like they only made really three real albums. Right. So to stretch out, you know, I'm assuming the concerts are like, you know, 2+ hours. Like,
yeah, I would think so.
I don't know. Like, I mean, they're getting pretty close to like having to do all the material, and they're good when they do covers and stuff like that, but and Nine Inch Nails, no problem. There's like a huge amount of
it. See, that's there. The thing. I have like almost no familiarity with Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah,
yeah. So,
like, Nine Inch Nails is
how many records do they have?
Debut really album was 89, and they're, you know, still putting out new music.
Yeah.
So,
well, there you go.
You'd be okay. What about? I figure you've got to have a pretty decent list.
There's 100 bands I would be like, yeah, I'm happy to see them.
Metallica is not one of them.
Well, so Metallica would be if they could ensure me that the set list, like this would be a thing where I was like looking up set lists from other nights.
Yeah.
Because I love their first four albums. I know those things front to back, you know, every song is as familiar to me as like the back of my hand, you know? Yeah. And then obviously I know songs off the Black Album, and every once in a while, like a song off Death Magnetic or whatever came out in like the early 2010s, maybe late 2000s. Death Magnetic, I think. It's got some good songs on there, but for the most part, there is so much garbage in their discography that I couldn't take the risk that I would get like 40% off songs off Load, Reload, and like Sane Anger. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm assuming the tickets are going to be like $90 a pop.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, right? It's these aren't going to be cheap shows. Now, pardon my ignorance, but like them putting out a new album, is this Have they been putting out new music?
It's been a few years, I would say. Maybe 5 or 6 since the last one, which was like a perfectly okay record. But I'm just, you know, the whole time I'm just sitting here going, Hardwired to Self-Destruct was 2016. The Death Magnetic was 2008. So, you know, they put out an album every 7 or 8 years at this point, it looks like.
Okay. Which is, they're still very much active. Like, you could have told they broke up and reunited and everything, and I would not know.
Yeah, they're big, like, they tour kind of a lot. They played Boston last summer.
Okay.
I don't know. Like, this new one, like, I listened to the single, which I very rarely do for a record that's coming out that I have an interest in. And it's like, oh, they're kind of doing like a Metallica take on a Motorhead song, which, you know, that's going to get me in the building. But that's also the single. So who knows?
Now, let me just ask you this. If I go to one of these concerts and they don't play a song that I like, is there any service where, like, when I get home, I could just download an MP3 for free? That I could then have of that song.
I mean, you can't. I don't think. Well, I guess you can download on like Spotify, can't you?
Okay.
And it's basically free. Like Lars Ulrich will get, you know, 0.0001 cents.
As long as he's getting something, I feel all right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's tough. They're a band that they've monetized everything. They're doing the Spaceballs thing. Metallica, the fucking whiskey. They literally have a whiskey.
I wish I was joking. Reference, man. That is.
Thank you. They literally have a whiskey where every like cask of it or whatever, they have put it on top of like a subwoofer or something like that and played a unique Metallica playlist into it.
Oh, wow.
And so like every bottle of blackened whiskey you have, they're gonna go, oh, you this is the one with like Ain't My Bitch was the first track on it, are you excited about that? And I'm like,
that is
no.
Okay, first of all, that is fantastic. And second of all, when you were starting to tell me that, like, I cut you off twice as you were saying whiskey, so I honestly thought you were telling me they had a whisk. Like a kitchen implement that was like Metallica branded.
You know, it wouldn't fucking surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
There's probably one out there.
Yeah. But, you know, if they were just like, on this show, we're going to play a lot of songs off Master of Puppets. I'd be like, well, I got to go to the Master of Puppets night. Don't I, you know? What am I going to say? It's one of the great albums of all time. But anyway, yeah, let's talk about hockey. I like Metallica, I guess, is my point. But, The number one news story of the week, I think, in hockey is we have some goaltending controversies, and not the kind we're used to in like Minnesota or whatever. This is the kind of goaltending controversy where goalies are just like throwing the net off the pegs at 100 miles an hour.
Won't somebody think of the goaltenders, Ryan?
So the Matt Murray thing, obviously, he knocked the net off 3 times in one game.
Saturday night? So what happened is, first of all, he did it once in the New Jersey game, which was just this course was the game where the Leafs beat the Devils and snapped the streak, but the Devils had 3 goals waved off, and Devils fans are very displeased with how that whole game played out. And as part of that, there also was a play where Matt Murray went across the crease so hard that he knocked the net off, and they then had to spend 5 minutes fixing the net. Now, some people say Matt Murray broke the net. Other people say, no, the fact that they had to fix it is proof that the peg was not functioning properly, and that's why it went off, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But then the very next game, Matt Murray knocks the net off 3 different times against Minnesota.
Yeah.
And including at least one that I would say was a very obvious.
I think it was the second one. Subtle.
And by the way, these are all happening in like cases where either the other team has a scoring chance, or it's the Leafs are pinned in on a long shift, or something like that. And he's not the only one, but the fact that the fact that it happened that many times in a short period, the fact that it's the Maple Leafs, it got people talking about it, and now people are noticing other goals. Like, I think Spencer Knight had one last night and stuff like that. So we are having a conversation about goalies knocking the net off, and it's become this whole thing. I'm describing all of that, like, from my perspective as just somebody who's watched hockey my whole life and seems to think that I can recognize when a goalie is doing something on purpose. But I have to say that there's also this other side of it, which is the goaltending brigade immediately showed up to defend the honor of the noble goaltender.
He's actually never meant to knock the net off in his entire career, and in fact, never done anything wrong.
Yeah, so I'm getting lots of like Mike McKenna was very vocal on Twitter coming after people. He at one point, I believe, unironically, although I could be wrong there, used the term goalie shaming for what people were doing.
No way. Come on.
That rocks.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So, and look, a lot of people are explaining that, you know, hey, is some of these, and I would agree with this, like sometimes the net just comes off in the course of a goaltender doing regular goalie things. And now that we're talking about it, people are seeing it everywhere. And maybe there's like in the Minnesota game, I would argue the third time that it happened with Murray, that one looked maybe accidental. Partly because he hits one post and like the other one pops off. And there's also a middle ground, right? There's like times where it's completely unintentional. There's times where it seems very intentional. And then there are times where goalies are just like becoming increasingly aggressive with how hard they go up against the post. They're sealing it off. They're using the post sometimes to push off to the other side. And that maybe it's one of these like accidentally on purpose things. Like I'm going to hit the post really hard. That way I'll know that I've got that side sealed.
And whatever happens.
Also,
happens.
Yeah, if I happen to knock the net off, then oops, I guess my team just gets a stoppage. But
that literally happened last night in the Oilers Panthers game. Spencer Knight.
Yes, that was the one. Yeah.
Same thing. They're pinned down in their own zone, and so the puck's within what, like 8 feet of the net. McDavid's lurking right there. Spencer Knight goes up hard against the right post with first his arm, then his skate, and he pushes across, and the net comes flying off. And McDavid turns to the ref like he had like a Rube Goldberg system rigged up, you know?
Yep.
So like, again, it's just, and then you got to talk about it on the broadcast, and the guy who's the ex goalie's like, oh, it could go either way. And the other guy's like, come on, you know? And it's the classic thing. We're just going to have this argument forever. Anytime a goalie knocks a net off, every goalie's going to be like, he's actually never meant to do that.
Exactly.
And everybody else is like, obviously, this is what happened.
So as rule book guy, this is the part where I say that is a penalty. Knocking the net off intentionally is a delay of game penalty, but it is a judgment call by the official. And anytime either the goalie or anyone on the defensive team knocks the net off, the referee has the ability to say, you did that on purpose. It's a 2-minute penalty. It's rarely called, but the league here could certainly take this opportunity without rewriting the rule book or making new rules or anything. Just send out essentially a memo to the official saying, hey, as a reminder, you have the ability to call this. If it's intentional, go ahead. We will have your back, et cetera, et cetera. Like, just make it clear that this is how it's expected to handle it.
Right.
The other way this could go, based on how some people are sort of framing it, is this could turn into a thing where people go, hey, we should treat this the same way we treat the puck going over the glass. Just make it an automatic penalty. The net comes off, and the defense was the last team to touch it, it's an automatic 2-minute penalty. And that would be awful. Like, that would be, again, we're right back to the puck over glass stupidity. That's the part that worries me here, because it's clearly being done on purpose sometimes. And it's clearly being done accidentally on purpose other times. It should be a penalty. It should be, we don't want this to catch on and become even more of a thing than it already is. But again, like our classic NHL, do nothing, and then swat the fly with a sledgehammer. And you could just see them doing that and turning this into a real mess. I really hope they don't do it. Just call it the way it is in the rule book, which is if it's intentional, then feel free to call it a penalty. And if that means that a couple of times a year we get a penalty called on a play that actually turns out not to have been intentional, oh well, that's life in hockey.
Yeah, I think all the time we kind of accept that, a ref's going to maybe get a tripping penalty wrong or a high stick or whatever. But in situations like this, it feels like you literally can only have it go one way. You know, like,
yeah,
if it's not 100% certainty, how dare you ever make that call?
And look, I mean, imagine if we did it as an automatic penalty, and now you've got to have all the officials huddle up and go like, well, I saw the forward's forearm touch the crossbar, so maybe he pushed it off, but also he was yeah. being pushed from behind, so is it? It would just be, it would be such a mess. And the other thing that would happen is, you know, you could see it being a case where they would have to write in an exception that, like, if the peg malfunctions, then it's not a penalty. So now get ready. We already have these video coaches who have become like the stars of the game looking for offsides. Now we get each team has their maintenance guy ready to go so that if the goalie pushes it off, right. No, you get out there with your little drill and your turkey baster and act like you're fixing the peg for, it's going to be such a mess.
I got to say, ever since I was a little kid, the fact that they have to have like a turkey baster, I thought that was so funny.
It is very funny. Yeah.
You're going to get all that water out of there. How else are you going to do it? You need a turkey baster. It makes perfect sense, but, like, who's the first guy that came up with that? He's a genius.
I mean, it was probably the very first guy, and he was like, I'm just going to do this temporarily until we come up with something way better. And no.
That's like how the first ice resurfacing machine was, like, horse-drawn.
Yeah.
Or whatever. You ever see this?
We should still be
very
doing that.
Cool.
Yeah.
100% agree, especially
just so we can see the Leafs lose to a horse-drawn Zamboni rider.
I was gonna say the horse beats them.
Yeah, hey,
just a Clydesdale out there in pads.
There's nothing in the rule book that says a horse can't play goalie for the Carolina
That's
Hurricanes.
What I'm saying. Can't beat the Leafs, certainly. Yeah. But yeah, all of this has reminded me the last week it's been has reminded me of when I was a little kid. There was a goalie for BU. I can't remember this guy's name for the life of me, but his thing was like if he was facing a 2-on-1, he would like act like he was backing up into his net and then like go to stand up and make a save. But, oh, I didn't realize I was under the crossbar and I threw the net off. Whoops. And it happened all the time. Yeah. Never a penalty and ever happened.
Love it.
Awesome. Cool shit. Yeah. The other goaltending controversy, of course, is that Connor Hellebuck gets his mask knocked off. I can't remember who they were playing, but he gets his mask knocked off. And then the refs are like, well, obviously you can pass it around for another 20, 30 seconds. That's no problem.
No, they didn't. Stop it. Stop it. It was 3 seconds. And the other team had the puck the entire time.
He's lying face down on the ice after he gets his helmet knocked off.
Yes. Right. Because so the other team has an open net and we're supposed to blow the play dead. Now, let's say this.
The puck was behind the net for part of this sequence.
It was 3 seconds. You go and watch it. It's a very quick thing. And also he is lying off to the side of the net. So it's not like he's in the middle of the net. I'm all for player safety. I'm not for exaggeration and silliness. And Connor Hellebuck was not placed in some sort of life and death situation here. He's lying off to the side of the net. And it's important to point out, His mask was knocked off by basically his own player. It was a situation where the Dallas guy gets shoved into him. His mask pops off. Dallas has the puck. Connor Hellebuck is laying at the side of the net with his head in his hands, either because he's selling an injury or maybe because he's protecting himself because he doesn't have his mask. The net is wide open. Dallas has the puck. They pass it out in front and shoot the puck into the net. And Winnipeg complains, saying, why didn't you blow the whistle? we've seen this situation before. In fact, we saw it again. There was another game over the weekend where it happened.
Yeah.
And it always comes up. Why do we not immediately blow the play dead when a goalie's mask comes off under any circumstances? And that's a fair point. That's not how the rule works right now. Right now, the rule says if the goalie loses his mask, we blow it dead immediately unless there is an imminent scoring chance, and imminent is not well-defined. But I would argue a wide-open net where a team has possession of the puck and passes it in front, that's pretty imminent. So the Jets-Dallas thing was called correctly based on the rule book, but maybe we should change the rule. Maybe we should make it safer for goalies. Maybe we should just say goalie mask off, automatic whistle. Doesn't matter if the puck is going in the net. It's immediately a stoppage.
And then Matt Murray is in the lab putting together like a Rube Goldberg machine that pulls his mask off the second there's a 2-on-1.
Goalies already do. We have seen goalies
100%
flip their own masks off to get stoppages. Now, usually it's because they're not just doing it just to stop the play. It's because they've popped a strap or something, and this is their way of letting the ref know, hey, I need a stoppage. But goalies do it. And we just finished saying with Matt Murray, everyone agrees that him and other goalies are intentionally delaying the game. So I'm just saying, if we say automatic stoppage every time a mask comes off, get ready to see a lot of masks coming off. And maybe you're fine with it. No, maybe you say, you know what, sure. If we have 100 annoying stoppages, but it saves one goalie from taking a puck in the face, it's worth it. You know what? I'm very open to that argument. I don't want to be sitting here saying don't do it, and then at some point the worst happens, and somebody takes a slap shot in the forehead, and we've got a catastrophe on our hands. Maybe we do it that way, but let's also not be, silly here. And anytime I bring this up, people are like, "Are you suggesting a goaltender would take his own mask?" Yes. I'm 100% suggesting 100%, that absolutely would happen. But maybe we do it anyways. Maybe this is just one of those things where I'm just saying, if we do it, I'm always talking about the unintended, unanticipated consequences. Like this shouldn't be unanticipated. Masks will be coming off often if you give it an automatic stoppage. And maybe one of the things we need to look at is say, okay, you know what? If a goaltender's mask comes off, either through his own actions or a teammate or, like the Connor Hellebuck situation, it's an automatic stoppage, but it's also a penalty on the defending team. Because if we're just talking about player safety, if we're just talking about not making sure the goalie doesn't have his life put in danger, then, hey, what's a two-minute penalty? So what? But if we're talking about, hey, I want a quick, easy stoppage, then, I don't think anyone should object to a penalty if it's really about safety. And not just about giving goalies another way to prevent fun stuff from happening.
Right. The thing that would happen is if you kind of put any kind of qualifier on it's an automatic stoppage, but is again, like the goalie club or alliance or whatever you want to call them. They would all act like, remember when the slap happened on the Oscars? Judd Apatow was like, he could have killed him.
Yep.
Do you remember this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what it would be like. It would be people just being like,
well, they're already saying that now, right? Like Connor Hellebuck, if you haven't seen the play, you it makes it sound like he was unconscious, strapped to a chair in the middle of the net, and the officials put the puck down 10 feet in front and let Jamie Benn or whoever take a slap shot at him. By the way, one other point on Connor Hellebuck. And again, I'm being a bit of a wise ass on some of this, but I do support the idea that, hey, player safety first and foremost. Let's look at it. I thought that he and Connor Hellebuck himself, frankly, seemed a little overdramatic about the whole thing, and certainly some of the fans and everything. I'll just say this: if we're really so worried about player safety, and that's what this is about, and it's not just about, hey, we wanted a goal taken off the board based on a technicality, but it's really about player safety. We're really concerned about the safety of these players. Here's an idea. How about if a guy lies on the ice with his head in his hands, we take him out of the game. What happened to the quiet room? What happened to concussion spot?
There you go. There, I think he cracked it. I think that's the, you know, if you're going to act like you're in, again, in imminent danger or whatever,
yeah,
because you got hit in the head and your mask came off. Fair enough.
I'm not saying he wasn't hurt. Like, I'm saying he really, really, really looked hurt. So either he's hurt and get him out of the game, or he's not hurt and he's selling it to try to get a stoppage, yeah. In which case, let's dial down the, oh my God, he almost died dramatics. Like, it's to say, we had this debate in a slightly different way a couple years ago. Remember, there was that play, and was it St. Louis where the goalie got hurt? Was it St. Louis, Dallas? Goalie gets hurt, takes a slap shot off the cross, off the collarbone, stays down, and the other team gets the puck and scores. And people are like, oh my God, why didn't we stop? Yeah, if you want to stop the puck, the play, every time a goalie looks hurt, go ahead. Get ready for
an epidemic
of goalies being injured all the time. And like, I feel like this is one of those things, we have to be able to keep two thoughts in our head at the same time. Player safety is important, and we should protect everyone, including goaltenders. And also, Connor Hellebuyck was very obviously selling an injury to try to get a stoppage late in the game with this team up by a goal, and it didn't work. The refs didn't go for it, and the team scored. It was the right call, even as it opens the door to a discussion that maybe we need to have about, is there a way to make the game safer?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that you can have a situation where you're saying, in this particular case, maybe it wasn't the craziest situation that ever happened, but in a similar situation where there's maybe a little more obvious danger or whatever, like, are refs going to feel empowered or whatever you want to say to, like, whistle it dead even if the puck is kind of around the net, imminent and all that shit.
Yeah, and also, if we are really, if this is really about player safety, let's also coach goalies that, hey, man, if your mask comes off, get out of there. Don't worry, because, you know, the scenario everyone envisions is like, you know, the mask comes off, the other team has possession, they send it back to the point, and there's Shea Weber or Al MacInnis or someone winding up for a slap shot. Teach the goalie, get out of there, man. Like, we're worried about player safety. Okay, if we give up a goal, we give up a goal. If this is not about preventing goals, it's about safety, then coach the goalies to get out of there. I know that goes against all their instincts and everything. And in that sense, Hellebuyck maybe did the right thing by just laying there with his head covered. But I don't know. I just, this whole, like, they put me in danger. I don't know, man. I know that the goalie weirdos are going to not like that. And I certainly wouldn't stand in there in front of 100 miles an hour slap shots. And let alone without a mask. But at some point, like, we can either acknowledge that goalies are super competitive people who have spent their entire lives trying to figure out ways to not have goals count against them. Or we can pretend that we don't know that. And I'll say
this to close it out, I guess. I think in that particular instance, if I'm a referee, I probably blow it dead. Like, because you can look at a million replays and go, oh, this is where, you know, his own guy collided, whatever.
I'm just saying, I see a goalie. Furious would you be if you're the Stars if that happens? Remember, this was a one goal game, dying seconds of the game.
I understand. Yeah.
They would absolutely go insane, and they would be justified. If you lose imminent scoring chance because the other team knocked its own goalie out of the way.
I don't think it was like a 2-on-0 and the goalies met. Like, you know, it's a scramble around the net. The puck, again, goes around behind the net. I think once the puck is behind the net, it is no longer an imminent scoring chance.
Yeah.
I
would argue that once the referee has time to see and assess, and the mask is off, the goalie's down, the puck is already back out in front. But I would encourage people to watch, like, go find the clip, watch the replay, see how fast it happens.
In real time. Watch it in real time.
Yes,
yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
But yeah, I like I say, I kinda, you know, I'm that Calvin and Hobbes comic strip about being able to see both sides of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, I feel paralyzed by my, you like what you're saying is right, but also like, if I see a guy down on the ice with his helmet off and like I blow the whistle dead, like, yep. You know, that's it. So it's tough. All right, I guess we got to talk about the Seattle Kraken, who are now, they're winners of five straight. They've won, I think, 10 of the last 11 or 12, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just winning like crazy. They're rolling. Scoring teams by a wide margin. It's yep. Crazy.
Yeah, as I always said, Dave Haxtell, best coach in the league.
One of the greats.
Yeah. One of the greats. Ron Francis who's played this all exactly right. Yeah, the Kraken, they won three of their first nine games, including losses to the Canucks, the Blackhawks, and the Ducks.
Yeah, and since three of the absolute worst teams in the league at that point.
And since then, they have won, yeah, you're right, 10 of 12. They are 10-1-1 in their last 12 games.
And I think they've only given up, like, 27 goals in the last 12 games.
Yeah.
Now, they have been outshot over this period, like, out-Corsied, out-everything, basically. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there is that to consider. And
the schedule has not been super challenging between, like, they've played some not great teams and also some teams that are just struggling. But that's... You don't go 10-1-1 just because of schedule. Like, that's they're good.
I'll say this for them. You're right that a lot of the teams they played are struggling or whatever. But like, you know, they played the Penguins twice. They played Calgary. They played Minnesota twice. The Rangers, Vegas. Like these are teams where
Vegas
yeah,
win
there
was
a
impressive.
Couple of games
that
against
was,
them.
Yeah,
for sure. I actually think they like completely outplayed Vegas in that game. So like on paper, you would say, wow. And I think kind of by the end of the season, you'll go, wow, they had a really good stretch against like some really good teams. One of the teams they lost to is the Winnipeg Jets, who were, pretty high up in the standings themselves. So I don't know, I guess, like what are you seeing with Seattle other than, they're shooting like 14% over the last,
it's, I mean, that's the thing. Like how often do, you know, I'm always saying like, oh, if opening night you came back from the future and you said, yeah, Seattle's like fifth overall in the leagues in points percentage, I would have gone, oh, well, there you go. Philip Grubauer figured it out, right? He's good again. Knew it. You know what? So even good goalies have a bad year. He figured it. No, he still stinks. But yeah. Martin Jones is the starter, and Martin Jones is playing fine. But this is the crazy thing. This isn't like a goalie based hot streak. It's
So in his last 10 games, he's .926 Martin Jones, which is like great, obviously, but it's not.
Yeah,
a 940.
Usually, whatever, when you pick, you know, like a 10-game hot streak, it's more than. But that is better than I would have thought. So okay, maybe that's part of it. But
yeah.
No, it's just it's.
He started out really badly and then has been very good. Not again, not like world beating or anything, but like good enough to win you most games, right? And here they are. But what I'm kind of noticing here is if you go to their like team leaders, they have. Five guys with at least six goals. I can't imagine there are too many teams that have that scenario.
It's
like
it's balanced. There's nobody right now.
That's I guess a better way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody's scoring more than a point a game. Nobody has double digit goals, but they've got two good lines, and then the depth is doesn't hurt them. Matty Beniers has been great. That's that's obviously a part of it when you have a kid that can step in and immediately be top six, if not top
three.
Boy,
he's good. There's your Calder leader in the clubhouse right now. I can't, you know.
Him or Logan Thompson.
As good as, like.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Owen Power, I guess, would be your third one, right? Like, I don't know if you saw. He had the single best, like, expected goals.
That's wild.
On ice for last night.
Mm-hmm.
the single best game in that statistic since 2007-08, like since they started doing that stat. Nobody was
that's wild,
you know, that territorially dominant ever. We're talking Nick Lidstrom, Pavel Datsyuk, Patrice Bergeron, you know, like Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby, Austin Matthews. Nobody's ever had a game that good. That's fucking crazy. And he's like a 19-year-old, 20-year-old defenseman.
That's wild.
Wild.
So, I mean, the thing with Seattle is, look, I mean, yeah, they're shooting like 12 or 13%. That's not going to continue for any team, let alone a second-year expansion team.
A team with what you would say is not a particularly large amount of skill.
No. Certainly not a team that you look at and you're like, you know what, this is the team that's going to outshoot Colorado and Toronto and Tampa and everyone all year long. That's not it. But they're banking a lot of points. They're banking wins. There's a path to the playoffs pretty clearly in the West with some of the teams are struggling.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And I think that's success. If they make the playoffs this year, that's a win. That's like, you know, that's mission accomplished on the season. Obviously,
they would love
higher, that. but that's fantastic, and they're on the way there, and it's great because I didn't see a lot of optimism for this team coming into the season, and they're surprising me definitely.
Yeah, Money Puck says currently at 98% to make the playoffs. That's even higher than Vegas.
Wow, I would not
Boston's
have thought that.
Boston's is higher. Yeah, Boston and New Jersey are the only two teams with a higher odds to make the playoffs right now, and it's both by like, you know, 0.5, 0.7%, whatever. So yeah.
Yikes.
Like respect. Like I don't expect this to last. I expect Martin Jones to turn back into like what we think Martin Jones is. But if you can make it a quarter of the way through the season or whatever with 29 points in your account, you're going to at least hang around the playoff bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I it's interesting because I saw even before the season started, there was like articles in the Seattle Times or whatever that was like, yeah, this team kind of like needs to do something before or else everybody is at risk of just going like, oh, I guess I don't care about these fucking losers.
Yep.
You know, like that was the general thrust of the article. I was paraphrasing, obviously. But like, I think if they're saying that in a news, now that might be like their local crank. That might be their, like the Seattle equivalent of Steve Simmons saying that, but I don't know. Maybe it isn't. I have no idea. I don't read the Seattle. Like I don't go in depth on who's covering who's writing about the Kraken for the local papers, you know?
No. So,
yeah. Good for them. They're, they're rocking and rolling.
Long suffering Seattle Kraken fans. Finally.
Yeah, finally it bounces their way.
Get to the playoffs. Can't wait till they win around.
14 months.
That's going to be great.
Yeah. I didn't have that written down, but like I guess the Pacific is kind of in a weird spot right now. Like Edmonton won last night, but they needed a late Evan Bouchard, the engine that's driving the Edmonton offense these days.
Mm-hmm.
But like Calgary sucks, kind of like they're kind of pretty bad in
Edmonton. I feel like their last two games could be like turning point games. I know it, like that's
I would
stuff
hope.
That we
I
we
would
do,
hope for their
like
sake.
Two big comebacks, which is also I guess a way of saying it could have easily been two losses, but this is where you start to think, okay, maybe we've planted a flag here. Calgary cannot figure it out. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't want to go too deep on that, but like that's just watching that Edmonton game last night and just kind of going, Connor McDavid's back. You know, like he had like a 3.4-point night, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you saw his pass on the Evan Bouchard goal. Like he kind of, you know, gets tied up on a faceoff with 8 seconds left or whatever it is, and just no look spinorama pass to nobody in particular, and Evan or it looks like it's to no one in particular, and Evan Bouchard just walks into it and ties the game, and then Dreisaitl in overtime. But yeah, they're a team that, you know, again, like if they, when those two guys are off the ice, you know, I think someone I saw this morning, someone said like when McDavid and Dreisaitl are off the ice, they're like a 41% XG team. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, I'd keep those two guys on the ice then.
Yeah. 30 minutes a night for both of them. They're all one of them is always on the ice. What's not to like? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But speaking of a team the Oilers beat with a big comeback the other day, it feels like the Rangers are extremely in trouble.
Yeah. It surprised me because this is before they lost last night, but like I went to write about this on the weekend and I was like, oh, the Rangers are flatlining. And then I looked and they'd won like 4 of their last 10, which is not good. Won't get you in the playoffs. No. But it was also not like as bad as I thought it might be. But they've now lost 3 in a row, all in regulation. So it is, including losing to Anaheim, which nobody should ever do.
They lost to Anaheim in regulation. The first, I think Anaheim made it like 19 games without a regulation win, and then they beat the Rangers. Crazy.
Yep.
So, and maybe they shouldn't have. Like, if you actually watch that game, like, the Rangers dominated them, as you might expect, mm-hmm. but, you know.
But the other thing is they're – go ahead.
So in the month of November – they have 4 regulation wins from 13 games.
Yeah.
Not and great. Like they have not played again. They're kind of the opposite of Seattle where it's like, you know, they played the Red Wings twice. And I know the Red Wings are like playing well, but on paper shouldn't the Rangers beat the Red Wings? I think they should. But like they played Nashville, Arizona, San Jose, Anaheim. Like these are teams they should beat. And they're just like, you know, doing okay against those teams and then like losing to the teams they should lose to.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, me and you took a lot of shit, or at least I did when I said like, I wouldn't be surprised if Gerard Gallant, like I think you said I talked you into it or whatever, but like I said going into the year, like I wouldn't be surprised if I guess my point at the time was the way they're playing is like very different from last year where, you know, obviously they were super dependent on the power play and goaltending. And if you want to say like just the problem is they're not getting goaltending and the power play is like only okay, that's true. That's like kind of objectively true. Igor Shesterkin said last night, like, I've played like shit and I'm ashamed of myself. It was basically his quote.
Which is, that was strange, right? Like I'm used to hearing goalies be self-critical sometimes, but it's felt over the top with him, and which makes you worry a little bit because you don't want goalies going, you know, off the, I don't want to say going like Jack Campbell on us, but there are goalies who get into like crisis of confidence, and it's hard to imagine someone as good as Shesterkin, but you know, maybe he's just kind of overstating the obvious, but I'm kind
of, well, he's given up 4 goals in each of the last 2 games and you know, like, if you're him, you're like, I'm the best goalie in the world. I can't be giving up 4 goals in consecutive games. Like, I get why he would say that, even though, you know, but what I guess I was going to say earlier was that their underlying numbers are actually like good this year. Last year they were bad.
Yeah, they've kind of flipped the script on.
And but they're still losing in part because, like, you know, they're not getting like world beating goaltending. They're not getting like, again, I thought he had a very legitimate claim to be the MVP last year, you know, and now they're getting, you know, like a little below average goaltending from him, and the whole world is like crumbling around them. And like I did write about it this weekend, and usually when you write about things like this, you know, fans come to you and they go, oh, you know, you don't know what you're talking about, blah blah blah.
Have you not watched every second of every game and pregame warm-ups? Well,
whatever, like I don't not expect fans to act like that, but my point is when I posted the link to my story, like every Rangers fan who responded was like, it's actually worse than what you're saying it is.
Wow.
And I don't know if that's true either, but like I can see where it kind of gets into the doom and gloom of it. Like, you know, if you told me tomorrow Igor Shesterkin goes on a Martin Jones style run of like he's a 930 goalie for 15 games in a row, I go, yeah, of course, no problem there, that makes sense to me. And the Rangers have completely turned it around, but like, I don't know. Like every, it seems like everybody's like, the, you know, this is like the third week in a row, basically. Larry Brooks has written a thing like, something's got to change here. I don't know what it is, but something has to ASAP. And you, then you watch the games and you go, well, he's right. You know, like yep. I watched that Edmonton game. They did not look that good. Just like kind of not good defensively. And look, what do you want to say? Like Panarin's been good, but he hasn't been an MVP style guy. And the yeah, young he's kids not, aren't yeah. coming along. And
he's not having a great year. Like,
no, and specifically, he's not having a great year on the power play, right? Like mm-hmm. that's the issue that you're kind of pointing to here is that last year they had one of the best power, I don't know, like the 20th best power play of the cap era, basically. Which like maybe that doesn't sound great, but think of how many times it like how many seasons have been played, like hundreds, right? And so if you're in the top 20, you've had a really good power play, and then they had maybe like a top 5 goaltending performance. And so the goaltending's not happening, the power play's not happening, and all of a sudden, you know, everybody who was like, well, Kako's figured it out. Lafreniere's figured it out. They were really good in the playoffs. And it's like, yeah, Kako has 8 points. You know, like...
Yep.
Lafreniere has 3 goals in 23 games. Like, maybe they didn't figure it out. And again... Is that not the story of the Rangers over the last like 10 years?
Well, yeah. Five, I mean, years, whatever it is. Certainly with both those guys, like at some point, it's not figure it out. It's just maybe they're just not as good as the Rangers thought they were getting. But
for sure.
What's really interesting to me is you look at their schedule, their next 3 games, Ottawa, Chicago. So if you were ever looking for a stretch of get right games, that's it right there. You know, two of the worst teams in the league. Ottawa's been a bit better lately, but Chicago's cratering. After that, St. Louis, Vegas, Colorado, New Jersey, Toronto is their 5 after that. So,
yeah, they basically got to go 3-0 in the games they should win, quote unquote.
I mean, it's one of those things where it's like if they don't rack up some points in the next 3 games, they could be in big, big trouble. Flip side, they could get 6 easy points in the next 3 games and then, you know, show well enough in those tough 4 or 5 games. And we're all sitting there going, what were we worried about? You know, they're back. So you've got, if you want to, if you're like me and you're kind of trying to figure out what side of the narrative to land on here, the next 8 games should give us a lot of clarity.
Yeah, and I guess what you're worried about is that, you know, they're, what, 5th in the division right now, and they're not catching New Jersey. The way the Islanders are playing, they're probably not catching the Islanders. And then you got to leapfrog one of Pittsburgh or Carolina to even really, like, get into the playoff conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, conversation is maybe overstating it, but, like, to feel good about your spot. To not feel like you're going to be white knuckling it for the rest of the season. And like Carolina hasn't even played well in there, obviously better than the Rangers. And the Penguins had like a long losing streak and they're obviously sitting in a more comfortable position. I don't know. It's just like one of those, again, like you're kind of watching it slip through your hands a little bit, you know? If you're the Rangers and you were again, and this is what was the premise of my article? You were supposed to take a step this year,
yeah,
right. Everybody mm-hmm. was convinced. You know, even coming out of their first 2 games, all the Rangers look like fucking world beaters. And then ever since then, it's like not so much. I don't know. I don't know what the fix is, other than like you just hope it turns around in net.
Yeah, I mean that's part of the fix is you go okay, we've got. Arguably the best goalie in the world. Like, okay, he's not standing on his head every single game. He's having a bit of a cold streak. Okay. And his cold streak is he's given up 4 goals a game, not 7. Like he's still, you know, he's still decent. He'll figure it out. Panarin's going to be okay. You know, we'll be all right here. And then you just kind of stay the course and sometimes that works. And sometimes it's 2 weeks later and you're like, oh, now we're 5 points out of the playoffs, and maybe we shouldn't have done that.
Yep. I don't know. Hey, like I said, I don't know. I don't know what you do if you're the Rangers, because it seems like, you know, absent firing the coach and bringing in Barry Trotz, basically, is anybody going to be convinced that the big move is going to actually work out for you? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, why don't we take a break, and we'll be right back, and we'll talk about, hey, we mentioned some streaks earlier. We'll talk about even more in a minute.
We're going streaking. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life does not come with a user manual. I don't have to tell you that. I'm guessing we all know that very well, especially after the last couple of years we've been through and all the different challenges that have been thrown our way on top of whatever just regular plain old life is thrown at you. When life is not working for you, it's normal to feel stuck. Navigating those challenges can make you feel unsure, whether it's career change, new relationship, becoming a parent, any number of things. It can be very difficult to figure out what path you should be taking. And therapists are trained to help you figure out the cause of challenging emotions and then learning productive coping skills for dealing with them. And that makes therapy the closest thing to a guided tour of the complex engine called you. Lots of us have tried therapy. It's been a success for many. It's a chance to just sit down, talk through situations, talk through challenges that you're facing, work on those skills, the coping, the self-empowerment, how to deal with difficult situations, even trauma, and learn how to turn that into something that you can deal with, cope with, and even benefit from. As the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp has matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists, available 100% online, plus it's affordable. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist. If things aren't clicking, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. It couldn't be simpler. No waiting rooms, no traffic, no endless searching for the exact right therapist. Learn more and save 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/puck. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, .com/puck.
All right. I guess, yeah, we're gonna talk about streaks. Like I said, it has been a year where there's been a lot of like noticeable streaks as far as I, you know, been paying attention to the various teams. We mentioned before the break, Anaheim, for example, had a streak of 19 straight games without a regulation win. That was like one short of the NHL record.
Yep.
For example.
That's one's impressive. What we're gonna do here in a bad way, but yes,
go ahead. Yeah, crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It honestly feels like 19 should have been the impossible number. The fact that a team had more than that, and I looked it up yesterday, and now I don't remember.
It was Arizona a few years ago, like 2017 or 18 or something.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway. It doesn't feel like that should be possible.
Well, it's especially like
this
today, right? Like, I mean, you could see like the 74 that's Capitals or the Sharks or something, but no, that's insane. Yeah. Today.
The Golden Seals.
Yes.
But yeah, so again, there's a lot of streaks going on. What we're going to do is I'm going to read a streak to Sean. And I'm going to have Sean rate the streak on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of how surprising it is.
Okay. Now, am I doing simple. Like with Anaheim, is it how surprised am I that Anaheim is terrible? Or is it like how impressive is the streak even given their terribleness?
You know, you can interpret it however you want.
I like it. All right.
Okay, great. So you know what? Let's just do Anaheim since we already talked about
I'll
it.
I'll go
19 straight games without a regulation.
I'll go 9 out of 10 on that one, and I'm doing that figure skating thing where I'm leaving room at the top in case I need to nudge somebody ahead. But that one is
sure.
That's crazy. In the parity era is to not be able to win in regulation. I mean, I guess the fact that we encourage everyone to get to overtime maybe. In some sense should make it more likely, but that's still like you play a quarter of your season and you don't win a 60-minute game is nuts.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to give it an 8 because I knew they were going to be bad. And then again, finding out that it happened whatever, 3-4 years ago. Mm-hmm. That makes it less crazy to me. Like you said, if you said like, oh, you know, this is the first time a team started the season with 19 straight regulation or without a regulation win since the 1922 Vancouver
the World
Tiger
War
Cats
II
or whatever. I'd be like,
where they had to forfeit their first 18 games because they didn't have any players. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But the fact that it just happened, it's like, oh, I guess if you stink, it is within the realm of possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. So let's go from a really bad streak to a really good one. The Bruins have now set the NHL record for home winning streak at 12.
Yeah.
Passing the 63-64 Chicago Blackhawks.
I gave that one a 7
out
of 10.
It's still ongoing.
It's impressive to, you know, just that the Bruins are playing that well. I don't put a lot of stock into like home and road win streaks because like
I agree with you.
You lost in between there. And the fact that, you know, my thing is always my litmus test for whether I should be impressed by a record is whether I knew what the record was before you told me somebody broke it. And in this case, I did not know. I did not grow up talking about the 63 Hawks winning. Now, is this the record for home win streak or is it home win streak to start a season?
You know, now that you say that, I'm in my head about it and I don't know.
Okay. If it's home win, to start a season, then I'm knocking it down to a 6 out of 10 because now we're getting, it's still super impressive that they're this good, but the streak itself is getting dusty.
Yeah, it is to start a season. All you're right.
Yeah.
Yep. But how about this? The Bruins had a 7-game win streak and then they lost to Toronto and then they had another 7-game win streak. How's that sound?
I liked the part about losing to Toronto. That was
cool. Sure you do.
That was my favorite part.
It was a pretty cool part.
Yep.
But yeah,
the Bruins are basically this year, man. They're so good.
Yeah, they really are. I'm going to give all of them, I'm going to say 8.5 for both of those streak scenarios where they had 2 7-game streaks, like basically back to back as they can be without being a 14-game win streak, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And setting the home winning streak record. I'm going to say they're both like a 7.5 for me.
Okay.
But only because, again, like a big chunk of that was without Marchand and McAvoy.
Yes. Yeah. Good point.
There was a lot of reason to be concerned coming into the year that they would maybe be like a 500 team until those guys came back. And instead they were like, we're the best team in the league, actually.
Mm-hmm. And aren't you kind of disappointed, though, that they've continued to be good after those guys got back so that we didn't get a chance to do the stupid thing where we're like, maybe they're better without Charlie McAvoy or some nonsense.
Well, what's funny is like Marchand has been like actively bad. I think after they beat the Hurricanes in overtime the other day. Like after the game, there were quotes from him being like, yeah, I suck right now. I don't know what's going on. So
smarten up, buddy.
Like, he's not even good and they're winning this much. Like, oof. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's go back to a bad one here. Ottawa lost 7 games. Now I know they've won 2 games in a row. They've turned it all around after they lost 7
straight. Season saved.
But Ottawa losing 7 games in a row.
I'll go 6 out of 10 on that one. They were playing better than the streak would say, but the fact that it was, and I believe it was 7 in regulation too. Like it just so disastrous for what they need to be this year. And they're not a great team, but it was also a little bit of a, like they deserved a bit of a better fate than they were getting.
Yeah, I'm going to be in the same ballpark as you again. Like I said, you know, kind of going into the year, like I don't really buy it with these guys even maybe being competitive. That it was, again, within the realm of possibility, but not the most likely outcome. 7 in a row is a tough one, but like they definitely had the personnel where if they had an injury or two, and that's exactly what happened, they could lose 7 straight, and here we are. So I'll go with you and say 6. Back to another good one here. The New Jersey Devils have now, after last night's game, have won 10 straight on the road.
Again,
that's not like
don't care about the road streak, but like they're
we're gonna rate that one separately. So
okay, I will say the road streak again. I'll go. Let's go 6.5 out of 10. Because it is more. I mean, it's hard to win on the road. That's more impressive than a home streak, obviously.
Yeah, it's certainly correct. Yeah, that's right.
And they lost their opening game of the season to Philadelphia on the road. Yep. And then they were like, that sucked. Let's not do that again the rest of the year. And yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to say this is like a 9 for me. Again, I thought the Devils, if, you know, they got the goaltending, they could be around the playoff bubble. They're one of the best teams in the league and they've kind of gotten the goaltending. So like I have to, you know, fully mea culpa on this one and say like the Devils are just good.
I didn't see it coming. And the thing is, like, you could make an argument, and I wrote a whole thing about the Leafs Devils game and why most of the calls were right and it was just bad break. But I mean, you could sit there and say like, hey, we lost a game 2-1 where we had 3 goals waved off. We deserved a better fate that night.
Yeah,
that's their only loss since the third week of October. And
right, and
that was also the way that game played out. Like, if you were someone who was looking at New Jersey going like, okay, yeah, they're good, but this streak is a little bit fake. It's everything's going right. This team's going to come back to earth. That loss to the Leafs would be exactly the sort of game that would tip you back into reality. And instead they've rolled off 3 straight wins immediately after. Like they're phenomenal right now.
Yeah, you can't argue with it. And I will give them winning 13 straight a 10 out of 10.
If you said
there's going to be one team in the entire league that wins 13 games in a row this year,
yep,
who do you think it's going to be? The New Jersey Devils do not cross my mind.
No. No, there's no way. I'll go 9.5 out of 10. Again, I'm leaving some space, but they've been so impressive this year.
Yep. Buffalo loses 8 in a row.
Now, who could have seen this coming? Started what? Was it 7-3? The they started something like that.
I'm pulling started up their well. Schedule now, but that feels right. Yeah. They started 7-3. Yeah, 3 regulation losses. Yeah.
And then 8 loss. And again, this is. Then, 8 straight regulation. Now, one thing I'll say on this is, man, like as I'm looking at it, man, they had a tough schedule. They played Carolina, Tampa, Vegas, Boston, and Toronto in that stretch of 8. Now, they also lost to Arizona, Vancouver, and Ottawa. So,
right. You know. And those early games, they played some good teams and some teams they should have absolutely beaten on paper.
You can't lose to Arizona at home. Like, not the
for sure.
Trust me, I know from experience.
Arizona 4-1.
Yeah, that's terrible.
and then then they have 2 games in a row after that streak where they look good, and then they're back to, well, I mean, they lost to Tampa and New Jersey. I think maybe you'd say those are schedule losses just based on the quality, but like they blew it last night, right?
Yeah. They've got Detroit next, Colorado would be tough, and then San Jose, Columbus. Yeah. So this is sort of like mission critical. Like if we're going to have any sort of season, we got to start getting some points in the bank.
Yeah. One last thing I want to say about the Sabres here real quick, just while we're on the topic, is like Tage Thompson, you know, hey.
Yep.
We were skeptical of that contract. And obviously it hasn't even started yet, so there's plenty of room. But boy, he looks fucking dynamic, you know?
Doesn't it feel like he is, or you tell me if I'm wrong, but it feels like he's like, putting aside the numbers, because he had a very good season last year and he's having a good season, but doesn't it feel like he's teetering on like a new level of stardom where he kind of goes from being like, oh yeah, this guy's pretty good on Buffalo, to like, oh, did you see what Tage Thompson did tonight? And then you're like, oh no, but yeah. I bet it was something. Like, it feels like I'm not expressing it very well, but like he's getting ready to break through to like legitimate star in this league, like guy that, you know, casual fans are like, what's you know, because I mean, hell, yeah, you go see a Sabres game, you can't miss the guy. He's 9 feet tall. So
yeah, he's right. There's an old story in Boston, like rock and roll history, that a local radio station had like a festival kind of a thing at like a bunch of different venues, and Nirvana played one. I think the Rat was the venue, and Nirvana played the night before Nevermind came out. So like, wow, whatever, yep. Nevermind comes mm-hmm. out on a Tuesday. They play Monday night. Ooh. And it's like this legendary thing of everybody in the building was like, who the fuck are these guys if they didn't know them already? And mm-hmm. Nirvana themselves were like, we're about to be the most famous people in the world. And like, I don't want to say that Tage Thompson is going to like pass Connor McDavid or whatever, but like, it feels like this is this like start to the season is that. Like the night before Nevermind comes out.
Tage Thompson equals Nirvana. Are you suggesting that his trophy case might need a heart-shaped box? That was terrible.
You know, I'm not going to go that far.
That was awful. That was, I apologize. Katie, delete that.
Yeah. Is that on Nevermind?
Oh, I don't know that. Jesus, man. You should be happy that I know something about a band that was popular when I was a kid. That's yeah. as far as I go.
Now I'm looking this up. No, it's on In Utero.
Don't fact check my stupid puns, please.
No. I'm just like, that was just one of those things that was going to bug me if I didn't look it up. Yeah, I had to. But what I want to say is, you know, everybody's like, whoa, where'd this come from? Like, boy, yeah, he scored at like a 40-goal pace this year. Now, this season, I think he's closer to like 55, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was he's like shooting the puck 40% more, or getting 40% more shots on goal than he did last year. And yeah, that'll get you a lot of goals. Mm-hmm. He had 250 shots all last year. He's already up to 100 a quarter of the way through the season. That's the difference, you know? And yeah, like if he can keep doing this, if they can keep putting him in a position to just like, you know, be Ovechkin basically, yeah, he's gonna score a shitload of goals.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. But yeah, it is crazy that again, like his career high in goals before last season was 8.
So if you got a guy on your roster who's only got 8 goals,
just feed him the fucking puck.
Yeah. He's just,
you're all set.
You got the next Tage Thompson.
Yep. That's right. Let's do another positive one here. Vegas winning 9 straight.
I mean, impressive to do that. I'm, it's not that I'm surprised Vegas is good. I'm surprised their goaltending is good. So I'll go 7.5 on
that. And that's why it's surprising. I think I'm right there with you. I'll say a 7. Just because, again, like I had a little bit of confidence that that Bruce Cassidy's systems make goalies good. I wouldn't have said they make goalies this good. It's basically, you know, Logan Thompson, like you said, Calder candidate guy now.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have been like, oh, he'll be pretty good, I guess. You know, but now he's like been definitively just like pretty inarguably good, you know?
Yep.
So that's where I'm at with that. Let's do the Penguins losing 7 in a row.
I mean, that to me is an 8 because I was on board with Pittsburgh earlier in the year. I thought
I would have gone even higher. I'm like 8.5. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I was like, oh, you know, they started off well. I'm thinking like, okay, these guys are set. You know, they did the right thing. They got the band back together. One more run for Sid. And then it just collapsed.
Yeah. My question, I guess, would be, did Crosby and Malkin both get hurt? Because then if you said, oh, the Penguins last 7 in a row, I go, well, sure they did. Why wouldn't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But no, I mean, Crosby's been great. It was, I mean, Tristan Jarry looked fantastic to start and then did not anymore. But
yeah.
That one I did not understand as it was happening and still don't.
Yeah, again, like I you know, I fully expect them to kind of get it back on track or whatever, but nevertheless, you got to be a little surprised that this is how it shook out for them to start the year. Hey, let's stay in the Keystone State here, and let's say the Philadelphia Flyers are in the middle of a 10-game losing streak. Or in the midst. I guess the middle would imply that they're coming up on a 20-game losing streak. Where they're playing.
I mean, 5 out of 10, we all figured the Flyers would be bad, but they did. They faked us out at the beginning, if you took the bait, that they looked...
Yeah, imagine, because remember when they won like 3 games in a row to start the year or whatever it was, they were like, oh, we're doing a rush sale on tickets or whatever. Buy tickets. And mm-hmm. everybody who bought a ticket has seen the Flyers get their fucking head smashed in.
Yep.
They're like, you got to buy tickets for October and November. And people are now like, you know, just crying, leaving the building.
They've lost to Columbus twice, Ottawa, Montreal in that stretch, among other teams, including Pittsburgh.
Is that good? Or
it doesn't seem good. I think it might be bad. Okay. But the good news is once they get the Islanders out of the way tonight, then from there they go Tampa, Jersey, Colorado. So they'll figure it out against them.
No problem.
Sure. Yeah, got them right where you want them.
All right. How about St. Louis wins 7 in a row?
Right after losing 8 in a row?
Well, so I was going to say, okay. And right before that, they lost 8
yeah.
in a row. Yeah.
So if we're doing it, yeah, chronological order, yeah, they lose 8 in a row. Oh, 5 out of 10, not surprising. I knew the Blues were bad. And then they just, this is one of those records that nobody knew was a record, but it was like they're the first team to ever go from a 7-game streak to a 7-game streak, which
makes sense.
I'm not surprised, but that's still pretty ridiculous. I have no idea. 9 out of 10 for both of them combined, because I have no idea what's going on in St. Louis. No idea if this team's good or not. I got nothing.
Yeah, I guess I would say combined, like 10 out of 10. Like, how could you ever predict that for any team
yep.
ever in the history of the
yep.
NHL? Right?
I you know
or
what?
Any sport,
yes.
really.
I'm with you. I will bump up to a 10. This is what I was okay. saving it for. I'll go 10 on this.
The losing streak, I would have said like 8.5. Like I wouldn't have ever thought that was possible. Like as much as I think they're kind of like just a middle tier playoff team. So like, you know, like 4th or 5th in that conference, you know, I wouldn't have said they could lose 8 straight,
mm-hmm.
but also like 7 on winning 7 straight. But then putting it together, it's obviously a 10.
Yep.
Chicago has lost 7 straight now.
I mean, 2 out of 10. If you had said during the season, will
right.
Chicago have a 7-game losing streak at any point during the season? Like, what would that have been? Like even money? Not much worse.
I wouldn't say even money. I'm gonna go a 3 here, just because I think it's hard for like. Well, I mean, I guess this exercise stands to the contrary, but like to me, they've lost like them losing 7 straight. Like it's hard for anybody to lose 7 straight.
Mm-hmm.
But if anybody was gonna do it, I would have said, oh, Chicago, Arizona. Those are my 2 guesses. You know. So.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, not.
And
not
to be fair,
surprising.
they did have a shootout loss mixed in.
Right. You know, another decent start, but yeah, it's crumbling pretty quick in Chicago, which was the plan. So
yeah, it's all going great for them, actually, the way this losing streak is going. You know, I guess the only bad thing is it's like cratering various players that they wanted to trade, their trade value.
Well, that was always the risk you take, right? I mean, I think,
yeah, I guess so.
I mean, the guys they want to trade are Taves and Kane, and they're, I don't see either of them value
well,
dropping.
Well, they signed a bunch of guys over the summer to 1 year.
Yeah.
Max Domi,
I guess
would
be the...
Anyway.
Be the guy.
Yeah. Calgary lost 7 straight.
Yeah, 9 out of 10. I do not get where... how the Flames are this bad or were this bad for that stretch. I didn't expect them to be top of the conference again this year, necessarily. But I did not see this coming.
Yeah, I'll go a little lower. I'll say a 7, just because, again, like, I'm a bit of a Markstrom skeptic.
Mm-hmm.
And so now if you had said, like, again, this is at any point in the season, I would have said, oh, they lost like 7 in a row after Markstrom played his 60th game. Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. But for it to be, you know, October into November, that is a surprise. So anyway, one last one here. Vancouver lost 7 straight to start the season.
8 out of 10 for the entertainment value.
Sure.
Although, I mean, you know, now we know that it was just them giving the rest of the league a head start before they, you know, made their playoff push. They're amazing.
They're world beaters all of a sudden.
Beat Colorado and Vegas back to back, man, on the road. That's no joke. But yeah, that was for that may have been the most entertaining streak of the year, just as an outsider, because the level of panic was
absolutely
significant.
Absolutely. Yeah. They're just a team where it seems like every time they're going to be teetering on the edge, and well, you got to fire the coach, you got to trade everybody. They're going to win 3 in a row because mm-hmm. they do have talent on that team in plenty of roster spots.
Yeah.
You know.
So. And it's interesting because I mean there was a lot of takes that I thought were very well reasoned, saying like it's time for the teardown. And now they're playing better, and which in theory gives you cover to not do it. Although I still don't know what they need to be doing, because they've got to, like you say, they've got the pieces. They shouldn't be losing 7 straight at all at any point. But I don't know that they should be winning 5 or 6 either. But yeah, we'll see.
I'm gonna say 6.5.
Okay.
No, just a six, because how could you be surprised that the Vancouver Canucks lost 7 straight? They're the Vancouver Canucks, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's it. We're out of streaks to talk about, I guess.
For now.
I can't think of of another one. I'm shocked I remembered this many.
Yeah, that's like a crazy number of streaks in a league that is all about parity and all about, you know, it's pretty wild. The Islanders and Leafs are currently won 4 in a row, but and I couldn't tell you who's lost what, because I'm looking at the NHL page and they break losing streaks because they don't want the GMs to feel bad.
That's right. I guess I would give it like a 10 out of 10 for the number of crazy streaks that have happened in the league this year.
Yeah. Yeah, no, when you kind of pitched this idea to me, and I was like, all right. And then I saw the list. I was like, holy smokes, this is wild that it's gone this far. And it's potentially going to get worse with the losing streaks as, you know, teams start tapping out on the year and go into tank mode. So
we'll see. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like you say, like there are multiple teams that are in the middle of kind of four or five game winning streaks or losing streaks right now
mm-hmm.
that I think I made the cutoff like 6. So, you know, if we just did 5, which is a lot of games to win or lose in a row, we would have been here all day, I feel.
Yep. Yeah.
So there you go. Why don't we take another break? And we'll be right back with, oh, you know what? I just saw a new contract got signed while we were doing the show. This never happens.
Ooh, fun.
So here we go. This week's episode of Puck Soup is brought to you by Uncommon Goods. And folks, with the holidays right around the corner, you're definitely doing your shopping out there, right? I know it. You know it. And one thing you don't want to do when you're shopping this time of year, you don't want something basic, you don't want something boring, you don't want something bland. Those are the 3 B's you don't want to hear about. Nobody wants that. And that's where Uncommon Goods is your secret weapon. That's because they are here to make your holiday shopping stress-free by scouring the globe for the most remarkable and truly unique gifts for everyone on your list. That's true whether you're buying for Secret Santa at work, buying for, you know, distant relatives, or your closest friends and family. They got all kinds of stuff, and I'm looking at their website here. There's a dipping spice kit. It's one of their best sellers. Himalayan salt tequila glasses, a personal pizza maker. That's crazy. Seashore ornaments shaped like various states. You can't go wrong with any of this stuff, depending on, you know, who you're buying for. But that is the kind of range we're talking about. So when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. These fine products are often made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out for the holiday season. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are of high quality, unique, and often handmade or made here in the United States of America. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere, from art to jewelry, kitchen, home and bar, and more. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, and with every purchase you make, they give $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. So far, they've donated more than $2.5 million. That's a lot of money. So here's what you're going to want to do. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/puck. That's uncommongoods.com/puck for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. All right, we're back. And as we teased on the other side of the break here, a contract just got announced as we were recording it. Robe hints, 8 years, $8.45 million to stay in Dallas.
Yeah, that's
makes sense to me.
It kind of does. I'm trying to decide whether this should be one of those contracts where I'm doing my usual shtick about why are guys signing 8-year deals in a flat cap world. But this is not a guy. This is not like a 21-year-old on a second contract. This is a guy who's 26. He's, you know, I guess in year three of being a very good player, I guess we would count the short season. He was a point a game, kind of broke through then, was good last year.
And that was a kind of a Tage Thompson thing where it felt to me like a little bit smoke and mirrors. Mm-hmm. And then like Jason Robertson and Joe Pavelski came around and they were like, no, we're going to make sure it wasn't smoke and mirrors.
Yeah. So yeah. I don't, this isn't, you know, to me, this isn't Jack Hughes or Tim Stützle or someone like that, you know, signing away their prime. This is a guy who's, yeah, I mean, at 26.
Was he not like a year away from UFA or something? He must have been close to that, right? If he's 26.
Well, I mean, if he's able to sign an extension, he must have been in the last year of his deal. But no, he was RFA on expiration. But yeah, would have been close to getting close to UFA status.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't like he's not, it's not like, oh, you should have bet on yourself because you bet on yourself. What, are you going to sign a 2 or 3 year deal and go into your late 20s? No, I think this feels appropriate. This feels like in that sweet spot where it's appropriate for the player to get the max length, but also the team isn't being insane here by handing out the 8 years. I mean, it'll take him to the wrong side of 30, but I don't.
Yeah, he'll be 34 when it expires, or 35 maybe even, yeah.
Something like that, and but also in a world where the cap's gone up, I don't hate this for Dallas either. This doesn't feel like this is Dallas, you know, locking in a guy now, but they're going to hate this contract in 3 or 4 years, like we often say. I don't think right. That's the case here either.
I guess my only concern, if I'm the Stars with this contract, is what happens when Joe Pavelski retires. Might be this summer, might be next summer, whatever. But like, we got to feel like we're close, right? And you know, it's a situation where I don't look at their roster and see a ton of guys who are like centers ready to take that step and move in between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep. And
I guess Hintz is a natural center, but you know,
yeah, that's an issue. But I mean, it doesn't mean that you don't hold on to your guy. That's
no, I know, but they have a question that needs to be answered, and maybe the answer is Wyatt Johnston 2 years from now or whatever. Maybe it's that fucking simple.
Yeah,
but but yeah, I don't know. Like, what is there to argue with this? Like, he's been awesome for two straight years, and or well, he's into his like third year, I guess, or whatever, of like, wow, this guy is really fucking good, actually. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. So, yeah, sorry, apologies. I know it's like anytime something like this comes down, we want to immediately go like, all right, who got screwed? This one, to me, I think makes a level
of
sense.
Fair for all involved. Yeah.
Yep.
What I guess the other thing that you'd have to talk about is, you know, when this contract starts, they'll still have 2 years left of Jamie Benn on a full no move. You know, what do you do with that? What do you do with, cause you gotta pay, Pavelski. He's a UFA this summer. And,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah, I mean, I don't know. Seguin like, and just, Benn are the two of the worst contracts in the, is there
well,
a team?
Seguin and Benn have been good this year, honestly.
Yeah, but he's not.
Unless the Stars have some pretty good intel on where the cap's going, and they might, you know. Like, because remember, Bettman earlier this season was like, you know, it could go, you know, it's scheduled to go up to 83.5, but it could be 86, it could be whatever, you know, it could go mm-hmm. up 5 instead of 1. Now that the Stars have to kind of be like, yeah, I fucking hope so. Jesus Christ.
Yep. You know? Yeah. And again, I mean, like, needing the cap to go up because you had to give fair market contracts to all your good players is not the worst place to be. And they did, you know, they're saving money on Jason Robertson right now. Holy smokes, eh? Like, don't.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, like, he signed for 4 years, and I keep forgetting. Yep. I always think that was, like, a 2-year deal or something. That really sets them up, like, very, very, or certainly sets him up very well to be, like, a $15 million player in 4 years, right?
Yep.
But it also gives the Stars, you know, again, this is like they gave hints, maybe $2 million that could have gone to Robertson or whatever, you know? I don't know. I'm really interested just because, like, they have a lot of moving parts that they have to figure out with this roster. I guess the thing that is, because they didn't want to do anything like make a big trade or anything like that to give Robertson 8 years at $9 million or whatever. And mm-hmm. then in 2026, 2027, they're going to be going like, fuck, we got to give this guy so much money. We got to give this guy, again, 15 million.
They must be wishing already right now that they had done that. Oh, well. By the way, Kevin Weeks has confirmed the contract that the Dallas Stars had already publicly announced. So,
okay, thank you, Kevin. Yeah, was he in like a walk-in freezer?
He was like in a room in his house. I guess that's that's
less interesting then.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin, you gotta make the walk to like the local slaughterhouse and just be in front of a bunch of cows up. You know. Anyway, so there you go. There's some breaking news for you. Again, shocked it didn't happen 1 second after we stopped recording. But mm-hmm. hey, sometimes you catch a break. How about this one? This kind of didn't get a ton of fanfare, and I, you know, I thought it was a pretty big milestone. Lindy Ruff, the win over the Rangers or the one before that maybe was his 800th career win. He's only the fifth coach in NHL history to get there.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Not bad for a guy that I thought was going to be fired by now. Oops.
Yeah. From like six, like how many jobs did he have where you're like, he has 100% overstayed his welcome. They're going to shit can him any minute now. And then it just doesn't happen.
Yep.
Sorry,
Lindy. As the fans
might say. He's 48 behind Ken Hitchcock for fourth all time. And I got to say, the way the Devils are playing right now, that's happening this season. They'll win 48 more on their next,
probably in a row. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, why not? But here's the other funny thing, is now that I'm looking at the list of NHL, head coaching wins records, Paul Maurice is only 15 behind, or I'm sorry, 16 behind Lindy Ruff.
Yeah. Paul Maurice has been doing this since, because he was doing this since he was a teenager. Like, Paul Maurice was
his first season is 95-96. How about this? He started coaching before Lindy Ruff did as an NHL head coach.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
By 2 years.
How old was like he when he started? Was he like literally in his 20s when he became a...
He must have been like 24, 25 maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to look this up. But because he was like a crazy young coach. And it just feels like, oh, he's 29 according to this. All right, so a little older than I thought. But when he coached Hartford. And I love that on Hockey Reference. I think it's still his photo from that year because he looks... you know, to the point now where like when he gets hired in Florida, people are like, ah, you know, a bright young mind. And you're like, I'm pretty sure he's in his late 50s by now. But Paul Maurice will always be the baby faced.
He's not. He's youngster. 55. That's not your late 50s. That's firmly your mid 50s.
Okay. Yeah.
And this is a guy who's been coaching since I think like before Joe Thornton was in the NHL.
Yeah.
Fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Good for him. But yeah. I would have never guessed, you know, gun to your head, brains all over the wall if you get this wrong. Has Paul Maurice coached more NHL games than Lindy Ruff? The answer is yes.
Yeah.
By like 50.
Yeah. I'm shocked at that. 52. And that he started before is wild. That's
yeah. Again, hold up a picture of these two guys. Which guy started coaching in the NHL first? It's going to be that old looking guy.
Yeah.
Paul Maurice looking good for 55. I got to say, I watched that game last night and they were talking about it a little bit. Like he started way earlier than you thought. This is on the Oilers broadcaster. Like he started way earlier than you thought. And then there's only been like two seasons where he like fully sat out.
Yeah. That's it, NHL coach. It's like you age in president time, right? Like that's except Paul Maurice. Yeah. I don't know. Good for him.
Yeah, he coached Metallurg Magnitogorsk during the 12-13 lockout.
Mm-hmm.
And in 05-06, he went from... So he got fired after 03-04 by Carolina, or in the middle of 03-04, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have a job during the lockout, as you might imagine. And then he's the head coach of the Toronto Marlies for the 05-06 season coming out of the lockout and then is immediately promoted to the Maple Leafs.
Yep. Crazy. Paul Maurice drop skincare routine when?
Yeah. Drop a how to stay around in the coaching world routine, I guess is the better thing for him to sell to people. Nobody ever wants to fire me. And when they do, someone wants to hire me immediately.
Yeah.
Oh, have you like won a lot of Stanley Cups, gone deep in the playoffs? No, never.
Almost
never. Happened like one time.
Very rarely. And okay.
Yeah.
But you're like a real stand-up guy and you never quit on a team. Oh, no, I've done that too. I'm just like, I'm sick of this. And I just left. And then they gave me the best team in the league that summer to coach.
And how'd that go for you? Oh, it's going way worse than anybody would have thought. Are they going to fire you? No, absolutely not.
No chance.
Oh. Well, great. Seems like you got it figured out.
He does.
He absolutely does. The one thing you can fairly say about Paul Maurice is that he has it figured out. They were saying last night that like his kid is like the play-by-play guy for an ECHL team in Florida.
Oh.
Now, too.
Very cool.
They're like, and his other son is a lawyer or is studying to be a lawyer or something like that. Everything's going great for the Maurice family. You'll love to see this kind of
thing. I feel like things are, yeah. This guy, does he do life coaching when he's done with head coaching?
That's what I'm saying. Like this, life and career coaching, like Maurice could probably make a hell of a lot more than he does in the NHL.
Probably could.
Maybe that's the trick, right? He's like, I'll work for minimum wage. You're just going to make me an NHL coach. I get to fly around on a private jet and stuff. And they're like, great. Works for me. Yeah. Anyway, one last bit of news here. The passing of Boreas Salming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anytime somebody comes out and says, oh, I have ALS, you're really kind of looking at the watch and going, not long now, right?
Yeah. And especially it's a condition where, you know, there could be different levels of prognosis, and his was very bad. All you can say is it was phenomenal. I mean, we talked about him just 2 weeks ago, I think it was, when he got to Toronto, got to have that send off from Leaf fans. You know, I don't think anyone at the time thought that the end was as close as it was, but it was understood that this was probably the final time that we would be seeing Boris Salming, and certainly in an NHL rink. And it's great. You know, it's how often do we say that, you know, the world loses someone and the tributes pour in, and you just say like, boy, wouldn't it be, it's too bad that people don't get to hear that. You know, that's all the great things that people say, that you know, they didn't get to hear it. And he did. He got to have that moment. He got to hear all the tributes from the Swedish players and everyone else. It's awful. It's a tragedy that this happened to him and to his family, but not a bad way to go as far as your knowing your legacy and how loved you were and how respected and all that.
Yeah, and nice for everybody too, like, you know, former teammates, fans, whatever, mm-hmm. To like get to say, hey man, we thought you fucking kicked ass. We thought you were the fucking nicest guy, one mm-hmm. of the greatest hockey players ever, all this. Like, everybody just got to say to his face how much he meant to them. And I don't know, that to me, that's like a really cool two-way street, because like, you know, how many, you know, I lost a family member in the last like couple of years, and it's hard to say, you know, like what they meant to you or whatever. And like to have that opportunity, like, you don't always get that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think that's, like I said, I think that's a really great, two-way street, excuse me. So yeah, I guess I don't have anything else to say about that. It's just, you know, you hate to obviously lose someone to ALS or whatever, but like,
mm-hmm. and
this is as good of a way for it to happen as you can possibly.
And the fact that, you know, that there's this whole new generation of fans who maybe knew the name but didn't know the story, and now
and now they
do. That's cool as well.
And hey, the Leafs honoring him with that patch on their jersey, that's like you want to talk about rating something out of 10. That's like a 10 out of 10 patch.
Yep.
Has there ever been a better one? Usually they just like, you know, put like a person's initials in like a black circle or whatever. And that's as nice a tribute as you can normally do. But the Leafs went all out for this one. This thing looks fucking phenomenal.
Yep. Yeah. The whole thing with I said it 2 weeks ago, like with the Leafs getting him to Toronto and the way they handled it was phenomenally done. And now feels obviously even more poignant than it did back then. So good job by all.
Yep. So yeah, that's it. We're done for the week. I got to go on a little mini vacation here, so that's why we're doing it a day early. Sean, plugs, you know.
You can find me at The Athletic. If you didn't jump on our Black Friday deal, I don't know what to tell you, man. It's gone. It's over now.
You blew it. So I know what to tell you. You fucked up big time.
Yeah. Definitely, you know, yeah. You should still subscribe, but just do it with the understanding that you should listen to me. I mean, really, in hindsight, I think with the Black Friday deal, it would have been better if any of us had maybe tweeted it out once or twice, mm-hmm. just because.
Yeah,
I feel
that
like,
was your big mistake. I think.
Feel like people on
there
Twitter
was just no way for
aware.
Anybody to know about it.
Yeah, like we should have had like a yellow graphic or something that could have been in your timeline 700 times a day, but. Thank you to welcome to all the new people who did subscribe. I know there were a lot that reached out and said they jumped in. You can find my stuff, my podcast with Ian Mendez on Thursday. My stuff, including this week, I'm going to do something I do every few years. It's one of the most difficult things I challenges that I undertake, but I'm going to try to come up with 10 players in the NHL, active players that nobody hates. Let's see if I can do it. That'll be coming in the middle of the week at some point.
Wow. There you go. For me, it's epringside.com. As you all know, use the code ILOVEEP when you sign up for a 1-year subscription, and they will tack 3 months on at the end. And much like you, Sean, we had a like 50% off deal for Black Friday through Cyber mm-hmm. Monday, and and a lot of people let me know they took advantage of it, and to those people I say thank you so much, and to those who didn't I say you missed the boat, you blew it, What am I going to tell you? But yeah, all kinds of takes over there. Again, I'm off for the next several days, so you know, no 3 stars or anything like that. But we got a lot of stuff in the hopper. Right? You know, I can look at the back end and see what we got coming up, and we got some really good stuff coming up about you know, your favorite team's prospects and you know, draft rankings and all that kind of stuff.
And they're all very good, by the way. Your favorite team's prospects are fantastic, man. A lot of these guys are going to play.
I saw the latest organizational rankings, and every team in the league is tied for first. So it's going
as it should be.
And then patreon.com/pucksoup, all kinds of bonus episodes here at the end of the month, as is often the case. And you know, sign up. You get bonus episodes from me and Sean. You get bonus episodes from Greg Beninsky, I think his name is. Mm-hmm. You get bonus episodes from me and Sean Gentile. You get bonus episodes from me and Adam Vingen. So there's all kinds of stuff going on over there. Most of it me-centric, so I guess your mileage may vary. But yeah, we got it all going on over there. Patreon.com/pucksoup. $5-$8 a month. You know, you get to pick your level.
Crazy. We had a bonus yesterday, and like Gary Bettman and Phil Esposito both showed up. It was wild. Wow. I can't believe we got them.
It was pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Felt like I was doing someone else's podcast when that happened. But kinda anyway. Yeah, that's it. Thanks so much for listening, folks. Have a good week, and we'll talk to you, I think, on the normal Wednesday next week. We'll figure it out. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.